Recording. So we're now recording. And I did send out a source sheet, and I'm going to post the short source sheet in a moment, but I'm going to post it not just so that you, I sent it out so that you have a record if you want to go back and put it back together. I'm not going to, don't be overwhelmed by it. There's only a few sources that we really need to concentrate on, but it'll be illustrative. Let me begin by talking about this week's Parsha of Emor. This week's Parsha has really two main themes, and they're the themes that really are part of the second half of the book of Vayikra. The second half of the book of Vayikra deals with the concept of Kedusha, of holiness. That's its main.
Rabbi, could you mute everyone, please? There's a lot of background noise.
I just did, but my mute isn't working.
Or at least have everyone mute themselves.
Huh? Yeah. I'm going to mute.
I don't know why the mute. Oh, there we go.
I'll mute.
All right. Now you're all muted and you can't unmute yourself. So use the chat if you want to ask a question. Okay. Let's start again. So Emor is following the Parsha of Kedoshim. With Kedoshim, the rest of the second half of Vayikra really deals with the concept of holiness. And holiness on two levels, two kinds of holiness. The holy person, the Kohen Gadol, the regular Kohen, and that's what the first part of this week's Parsha deals with. Emor deals with the Kohen. And the second part deals with holiness in time, which is the holidays, the festivals, which is what I want to take a look at for a moment. Now, we have a number of places in the Torah, five in fact, where it gives a listing of all of the Moadim, all of the holidays. A couple of times very briefly in Shemot, in Exodus, and then once each, a more detailed listing in Vayikra, Bamidbar and Devarim. Now, in Bamidbar, there's a very specific purpose in listing the holidays. There it deals with what are all of the special added sacrifices that are brought on those days, that there were special sacrifices in addition to the daily morning and evening, late afternoon sacrifice, right? The regular korban of each day. We had the special ones. And that's where when we do Musaf, Musaf comes from these additional sacrifices. That's why on Shabbat there's a Musaf, on Rosh Chodesh, on all the other festivals, we have a special Musaf, because there are additional offerings. That's in Bamidbar. In Devarim, there's another specific idea. The specific idea in Devarim speaks about the festivals being a public pilgrimage festival for you, your spouses, your children, your servants. Everybody publicly is supposed to go up and celebrate in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem, at least for the pilgrimage festivals. But even the other festivals are all festivals that are binding upon kind of a public communal gatherings. This account that we're going to look at momentarily is a little bit different and harder to place. Now, there are some additional laws that we don't have anywhere else. For example, the law of the Arbaminim, the Lulav and Esrog, and certain things related to Shavuot. But it's very strange in the following sense. Now I'm gonna share the screen. I'm gonna put up, hopefully, here'd you go. Why can't I find it now? Hold on. Why won't it show me my whole screen here? That's not it. All right, well. Hold on a second. That ain't it. Sorry about that, folks. I have some trouble getting my screen up. Hold on one second. Maybe this will work. All right. All There we go. All right. Sorry about that delay. Okay. So if you look at the at this first, I really just want to primarily look here. It says, I'm going to look at the English. The Lord spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the children of Israel. The Israelites say to them, Elam Moadai, right? These are my fixed times, the fixed times of the Lord that you shall proclaim, Mikre Kodesh. You shall proclaim as Mikre Kodesh, right? This is what we say on Kiddush on the festivals, right? Well, we'll see it in a minute. We see it a little bit later. And then it mentions Shabbat. 6 days shall you do all of your malacha. Shabbat, Shabbaton, Mikra Kodesh, Kol Malacha Lo Ta'asu, Shabbat, Hila Hashem, B'chol Moshvoteichem. Then it mentions Shabbat. It refers to Shabbat as a Mikra Kodesh. And then it says, these are my, again, Eila Moadeh, Hashem, Mikra Kodesh, Hashetukatom, B'moadam. That's what we say in Kiddush. What's very strange is, why does it introduce all of the festivals, mentions Shabbat, and then introduces all the festivals again. And then we have the introduction to Pesach, to Shavuot, to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, and Shmini Atzeret. So what's very strange here is nowhere else in the Torah is Shabbat referred to as either a Moed or a Mikre Kodesh. It's never referred to as an appointed season or as a called to holy convocation. So that's what I want to focus on is why is Shabbat stuck in here? Usually what will happen is in the other places where it mentions all the festivals, Shabbat is separate. Shabbat will come first. And then after that, after we're introduced to Shabbat, then we have all of the other festivals, or it might be Shabbat and then Rosh Chodesh, all the other festivals. What does it mean that Shabbat, how is Shabbat stuck in here, surrounded by the idea of it being Moadeh, a Moed, and a Mikre Kodesh, neither of which is Shabbat? So for example, what does it mean to be a Moed? So our calendar, the Jewish calendar, is a combination of a solar and a lunar calendar. It's a lunar calendar in the sense that all of our festivals follow the lunar calendar, right? Follow the lunar months. The first day of the first month, the seventh day of the seventh month, or the 10th day of the seventh month, right? That's how we count our festivals. On the one hand. On the other hand, all of our festivals are associated with what? With the agriculture of the time, right? Pesach is also known as Chag HaAviv, the springtime festival. And because of that, we have to make sure that Pesach always falls out in the springtime. So those festivals are tied to our calendar in terms of our calendar being either the lunar or the solar calendar. Shabbat's not that. Shabbat has nothing to do with either of those rhythms. Shabbat has its own rhythm. What is the rhythm of Shabbat? Every 7 days, we're called upon to remember and commemorate the creation of the world. It's an innovation. It's not based on a calendar. It's based on the religious precept, the concept of God's creating the world. And by the way, we established that. That's not some natural law based on a natural flow of either the moon or the sun. So Shabbat doesn't fit. Okay, by a nod of heads, you all get me with that? That from the sense of being a Moed, Shabbat doesn't fit. It's not an appointed season. It's not appointed either related to lunar or solar calendar. That's the first oddity here that worries. The second thing is, it's really not a Mikra Kodesh. What does it mean when it says Mikra Kodesh is either referred to, translated as sacred assembly or a holy convocation, right? Some holy gathering, some kind of convocation. But the word Mikra also implies something that was called out, for the word to call, right? Vayikra. So there are two ideas there that I do want to share with you. So I am going to go back to my screen share for a minute. So if you look down here, If you look at source number 10 and source number 11, so the Ramban says, the explanation of holy convocation, Mikra Kodesh, is that on this day of the festival, everyone shall be summoned and gathered to sanctify the day. For it is an obligation on all Israel to gather to the house of God on the day of the festival to publicly sanctify the day through prayer and praise. So according to the Ramban, the idea of Mikra Kodesh is it's a national gathering. It's a public national gathering. That's not Shabbat. Shabbat is celebrated locally, not nationally. There's no pilgrimage for Shabbat. Shabbat is not that kind of a convocation. And if you look at the Rashbam, number 11, which also Rashi also quotes, but the Rashbam says it better, which you are to designate as periods of sanctified time. So he sees Mikra Kodesh as, right, a holy convocation or a sacred assembly. When the word kra appears in connection with the festival, it means the fixing of certain dates in the calendar. Now, what he's referring to here is the fact that how do we determine all of our other festivals, including Rosh Chodesh? How are they determined? They're determined by a Beit Din of human beings seeing the new moon, declaring the new moon. Two witnesses come to Beit Din. The moon is declared by the Beit Din. And then it's either is or was Rosh Chodesh. Today, tomorrow is or are Rosh Chodesh. And then once we know when Rosh Chodesh is, we now know when all the festivals are based on the date in the calendar. We know that Passover is on the 14th or 15th day of the first month, and that Shavuot is 50 days after that. And we know that in Tishrei, on the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah, the 10th is Yom Kippur, and et cetera, 14th is Sukkot, and then Shmini Atzeret. So according to the Rashbam and Rashi, it's a holy convocation means the holiness was called out, Mikra Kodesh. It was called out holy by whom? By the Beit Din, by Bnei Yisrael. Shabbat doesn't fit that category either. Shabbat is not something that we call out as holy. Who declared Shabbat as holy? Who called Shabbat holy? We did this last week. In Bereshit, chapter 2, verse 3, right? It was God that says, Ve'kadesh oto. He sanctified the seventh day. Okay, so Shabbat doesn't fit here. It's not a moed, and it's not really a mikra kodesh, yet it's called that here. So that's the issue that I want to try to resolve. And it's enwrapped by Eila mikra kodesh before and after. So apparently, this is some kind of an introduction, after which we're able to understand and better appreciate the rest of the holidays and the cycle of the calendar, the Jewish calendar. Okay, you're with me so far? We got the question. So now we got to kind of figure out what is the answer. So the answer has to do with the following. Last week's parsha, it said, Kedoshim tiyu ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. You shall be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. Well, wait a minute. If you've been at daily services and I've been discussing Maimonides' 13 principles of faith, we know that God is incomparable to anything. If God's holiness, how can I aspire to God's holiness? If God is holy, how can I be holy like God? How does that fit into this whole sequence, and how does that fit into the idea of the holidays? So what we have to do is we have to look at, there was a moment in history in which everything changed. And Emor is now jumping. I mentioned it's the second half of Vayikra deals with the idea of holiness. So in order to get the answer here, you have to understand we at the second half of Shemot, the second half of the book of Shemot deals with what? The after events of the Exodus from Egypt. We left Egypt. Where did we go? We went to Mount Sinai. We got the Torah from God. God came down to us. Again, all God-centric. God is the initiator. God came down, gave us the Torah. What did we promptly do right after that? Sinned with the golden calf, right? And then, at least according to Rashi, the Ramban says it was always, then the rest of Shemot has to do with building the Mishkan. According to the Ramban, we were always intended to build the Mishkan. We'll come to that. According to Rashi and others, the building of the Mishkan was the kapara, was the atonement for the sin of the golden calf. We'll see in a moment how that all ties together. So then, from that point on, we have the building of the Mishkan, as all the rest of Shemot deals with building the sanctuary. The first half of Vayikra deals with the utilization of that sanctuary. You need the Kohanim, you need the sacrifices, how it all works. And then we come back to this idea of you shall be holy like I, the Lord your God, am holy. And suddenly the rest of the parsha is dealing with holiness. So we're talking about the holiness of the Kohanim and now the holiness of the festivals. And Shabbat stuck in the middle. So what's happening here? So what's happening is that there is, at the time of the commandments, remember said, God wanted us to be a mamlechet kohanim v'goy kadosh, a nation of priests and a holy people. What was God telling us by that? What he was trying to say is, especially following the sin of the golden calf, where there was a tremendous amount of a problem with a totally God-centric sense of sanctity and commitment. What had to happen was now that Kedusha, that holiness, couldn't be something that comes down from God. Holiness now has to be something that emanates from us. Repeat, holiness now in the world has to emanate from us. It can't emanate from God. You be now be holy like I am holy. You now have to be the source of holiness. And we see that in what? In the building of the Mishkan. As I've said many times before, revelation at Mount Sinai was God coming down to a place that he chose, coming down to us, right? And we going up to him and meeting him there, Moshe meeting him there. Now we have a Mishkan, a place, because up until now we talked about an Emor. Emor deals with holiness of people, holy people, Kohanim, and holiness in time, Shabbat and the Moadim. We also have holy space. The Mishkan represented holy space, right? A place that we built, that we bring God into. Well, God came down and dwelled in. Now the next step is that we have to also create the holy people, the Kohanim, right? The Kohen maintains his Kedusha by following the rules and regulations at the beginning of this week's Parsha. But then the time, the holiness in time is mostly Shabbat. We still haven't answered yet. The rest of the festivals are days and times that we establish. God doesn't establish it. We have witnesses who come to a Beit Din, and only when the Beit Din says, today is Rosh Chodesh, can we establish when all the holidays of that year are going to take place. Okay. So where does Shabbat fit into that? So Shabbat becomes the place upon which it all revolves. It revolves in a couple of ways. That Shabbat represents, first of all, the seventh day. And I don't want to go into great detail on this, but it's very interesting that there are seven festivals that are counted in this week's Parsha, aside from Shabbat. Now, it's very interesting, by the way, I just want to point this out as a little bit of an aside. I'm sorry, I didn't see the chat there. Who was asking a question? Someone else, so you wonder how I define holiness? I'll do that at the end, Steve, okay? But holiness is, we'll come back to that. Let's leave it for a minute. It'll take me too far off field. But Shabbat does represent the first thing that was declared holy, and it was declared holy by God. So that's the first connection. Shabbat is the holiness declared by God. But now in this week's parsha, what God is saying is Shabbat now has to also be a day in which you have to make it holy. By how you observe and celebrate Shabbat, you make it holy, and you introduce that sense of holiness of Shabbat. So, because to your point, Steve, when we talk about it being a holy convocation, we talk about all the festivals, what makes them holy? We can't do malacha. What is the source for that? Shabbat, with the exception of being able to cook and be able to carry. So Shabbat becomes that. Excuse me. The other nexus is that it's called a moed. How does this, it's a moed that we call. So if you look at the very first verse in Parshat Vayikra, if you look at source, the very last source here, source number 14, Vayikra el Moshe yadaber Hashem elav me ohel moed lemor. How does the whole book of Vayikra begin? God calls Moshe and he speaks to them in the tent of Moed. So notice that's the whole transition. The beginning of Vayikra, it's God-centered. God is doing the calling to Moshe, and it's the Ohel Moed, the tent, his tent of meeting. Now we have Mikra e Kodesh. Now we have, we determine the time, not necessarily the place, we determine the time and the essence of that Kedusha, which emanates from Shabbat. Also, Shabbat being the seventh day, seven being the number around which the holidays are established. So again, if you'll forgive me, if you look at this list of holidays, if you look at, excuse me, source number one, where it talks about Pesach and Chag HaMatzot, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. Look at what it says. These are the set times of the Lord, sacred occasions, which you celebrate at each appointed time, okay? The 14th day of the month shall be the Passover offering, and the 15th day of the month, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It's talking about two festivals here, one which is holy and one which is not. The 14th day is Erev Pesach. That's when all the Jews went up and offered the Paschal offering, but it's not a Mikra Kodesh. The Mikra Kodesh is the 15th day, the day we call Chag HaMatzot. That's actual Passover. So Chag HaMatzot, that's festival number one. Shavuot, festival number two. Rosh Hashanah, festival number three. Yom Kippur, festival number four. Sukkot, festival number five. And Shmini Atzeret, festival number six. Why do I feel like I missed one? One, two, three, four, five, six. Right, and then, well, Pesach being the seventh. So we have seven festivals that parallel Shabbat in the idea that these are festivals of holiness that we create. Not that God created the Shabbat, we create the other festivals. Excuse me. We're the Tikru Otam. We're the ones that call them into holiness. So the idea being here that there's a partnership, that the partnership continues. Shabbat, what Shabbat does is it becomes the nexus between what God does for us and the holiness that God imbued in the world, and the Moadim, our taking that holiness of Shabbat and imbuing the festivals, imbuing the lunar calendar and the solar calendar with a sense of Kedusha, with a sense of holiness. Now, by holiness, Steve, are you still here? Yeah. So by holiness, just to go back and answer your question, it's something I teach at least once a year. When God created the world, each step of creation, God said it is good, right? After each part of creation, God said it is good. In the end, he said it's all very good. What is good? What is goodness? What does it mean God said it's good? Does it mean, oh, it works, it's good? Does it mean, oh, it's aesthetically pleasing? I like it. It's good. Like looking at a painting. What does good mean? What we understand good means is that it has the potential for goodness. What does the potential for goodness mean? It has the potential for sanctity. What does that mean? What does it mean, the potential for holiness? It means that everything that God created in the physical world needs to be activated. It has potential in it for holiness, for good. What activates that potential? Man's interaction. That's the whole purpose of man, is to take the physical world, everything in the physical world, and elevate it to holiness. Sometimes that holiness is in service of God. So for example, everything God created has a potential for use and abuse. It could be good, it can be bad, right? We can use our speech, which is what defines man according to the sages as being human beings, as our ability to speak and to communicate. We can profane our speech and we can sanctify our speech. We can, not just the words we use, but we can save a life and we can destroy a life with our words. We can take everything in the world. We can take grapes and we can make wine out of the grapes. And through that wine, what do? We sanctify Shabbat and every festival by Kiddush, which is from the same word of holiness. We're Mekadesh, we make it holy. How? By using it in moderation. That's how, so everything, who would have known that in the bark of certain trees or in certain natural things, there are medications and there are things that can save life, or they can be abused and destroy life. So holiness is that our ability to take things in the physical world and elevate them to a level of sanctity, sometimes in the service of God, like making Kiddush, and sometimes in the service of others, between man and fellow man, and between man and God. That's the definition of holiness, to elevate ourselves and to use everything that God gave us in proper moderation to sanctify each other and to sanctify God. And by the way, if you think about it, the Torah forces us to engage the physical world, right? I mentioned that in this week's Parsha, it talks about Lulav and Esrog. You know what? Somewhere along the way, we have to have Jews who are botanists. Otherwise, how do you know what's a citron from a lemon? How do we know a river willow from another branch of a tree? We have to be vintners. How do we make wine? We have to be biologists. How do we know about the reproductive system and Nida and menstruation, all of that? The Torah forces us to engage the physical world to create a sense and use it in moderation to sanctify God. And that's what this parsha is trying to get to, is that Shabbat becomes, in terms of holiness and time, in particular, the calendar, Shabbat becomes the model of what God gave us, what came from God. Shabbat came from God, not from us. But we use that to sanctify these times in the calendar and these events through that model. I hope it was somewhat illuminating for all of you. Thank you for participating. I'm now going to unmute you in case you would like to share some thoughts as soon as I can. Hold on. All right. You can now unmute yourselves if you want. Any thoughts or comments? I'm losing my voice again.
Shkoyach, Rabbi. Very good.
All right. Just made a comment about, so if you don't, if everything in moderation, if you don't do things in moderation, then it's bad.
So Maimonides discussed.
So having too big of a house, too many cars, too many boats, too much money, too many.
So the answer is yes. Maimonides discusses all of those things. He says what's called the golden mean. You've heard the golden mean, Maimonides' golden mean, that in every trait that a person shouldn't be a spendthrift, but a person shouldn't be a miser either, right? One should give, but in the area of tzedakah, even in the area of tzedakah, he says there's a limit to how much of your net worth you can give to tzedakah. He says there's only two areas where he talks about extremes. He says, one area we should stay away from the extreme, he says, because every evil comes from that extreme, is anger. You should never get angry. Anger is bad. On the other hand, he says, you can never be too humble. It's okay to go to the extreme of humility. So other than that, he says, everything else is in moderation. But again, when we say moderation, again, it depends, you know, it says, "V'samachta b'chagecha v'ita ach sameach." Sometimes you have to be overly joyous, right? On Sukkot, right, we're supposed to be in the new mitzvot. Exactly. Yeah, that's you know. But even then, how many people in their joy might abuse that joy and become like on Simchas Torah or on Purim, become so shikr that it becomes a Chilul Hashem, not
that's
a
Kiddush Hashem. That's right.
Right? Right. So that's where even in your joy, there has to be, yes, I can be excessively, I need to be excessively joyful moderately. So, but thank you for bringing that up.
I think you're a politician. I think you've given
I'm
up.
I'm just a teacher. That's the rabbi.
Thank you.
Up with him.
Thank you, Rabbi Zach. Much appreciated. One word of advice. I'd keep small children away from this recording. Those purple hands will terrify them.
Sorry, I'm in the
have
I'm
a good
the
office. Night.
And when I go in the other room, I wear my mask because Francis is in the other room. So I'm trying to follow all the rules.
Rabbi, I had one question on your handout.
Yes.
And it is on the paragraph that is about Pesach and Chag yes. Hamatzot.
Yes.
The last sentence in English, the seventh day shall be a sacred occasion. You shall do no work at your occupations.
Well, that there.
I never noticed that before.
What he's trying to do with the Hebrew is melechet avodah. It uses melech and avodah. Usually, you see, avodah can be translated many different ways, right? Avodah usually is labor, as opposed to malacha, which is creative work, which is different. So I think the translator here from Sefaria, whenever they got that translation, is trying to distinguish avodah as labor. So they're calling it your occupation, you labor, you're a laborer. But it could mean any kind of physical exertion effort, as opposed to creative work, which could be turning on a light switch. Mm-hmm. That would be a malacha.
One thing that struck me was that in talking about the holiness coming from within ourselves at this point and viewing the holidays, that it reminds me of the question that comes up about after crossing the sea, and that there was such an understanding and faith at that time, and yet then we broke down and sinned with the golden calf. And how is it, you talk about how is it that that under those circumstances, we could have erred that way. And it seems perhaps that when it comes down from above, from exterior to us, from God, that it really is something that we have to do and bring up. And that's where it becomes an ongoing and a permanent way of creating, exhibiting, fulfilling holiness.
Correct. In other words, what you're saying, and let me restate it, is what we learned from the sin of the golden calf, the after effect was that when everything is God-centric from the point of view that God is the initiator, right? And then suddenly there's a perception of God's absence through Moshe. That God somehow was absent, then this, and the idea of Moshe maybe being an emissary created this idea that we need another emissary to connect to God. And so what God wanted to do was flip that. No. I'm God. I'm the only God. I'm the only one that you serve. But that service has to come from within, not from without.
Yeah.
You have to be the architects of that service. Here are the ground rules. Here's the Torah. Here's the mitzvot. But you have to be able, on a certain level, you have to be the architects of that. And that's why later on in the Torah it says that God gave to the leaders and the judges that will be in that day, meaning, and that's how the whole rabbinic tradition of halacha, of being able to decide in different situations how to function. How do we celebrate Pesach during a coronavirus? Well, God didn't drop another set of commandments down to tell us how to do that. Our rabbis, who are able to understand and interpret, helped us figure that out. And that's how Judaism evolved from the stage one to stage two, or maybe it's stage three or four. I don't want to get too caught in the minutia. But that's really the whole idea, is that we are a God is the only God, we serve God. But the methodology for that is something that's very centric within us. What's the word I want to say? How do you say human-centric? So that's really the key idea here, but that it revolves around the concept of Shabbat. That's what I was trying to say. And that's why Shabbat is kind of right in the middle. It's almost a chiastic structure, if you will, to those first verses, to create the sense of Shabbat being the center of it all. And that's why, by the way, our observance of Shabbat brings it together. And that's why they say that more than anything else, Shabbat has kept the Jewish people. All right. Thank you all. Until Wednesday, we'll talk again. But have a good week. Shavuot Tov.
You're well, you too.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.